pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Glad you're here as well. It's a designated hitters podcast. That's what's coming your way this time around. Both present and past. We're going to talk DHs in this one. Of course, Nelson Cruz just signing with the Seattle Mariners. We're going to hear from Nelson Cruz coming up. Shannon Dreher, a chance to talk to the new Mariners designated hitter. And I'm going to dive into him a little bit. We'll go more in depth in the next few weeks. But we'll touch on Nelson Cruz, what he has done, what the position has been like for the Mariners the past few years. And then we're going to turn back the clock, and we're going to talk some Edgar Martinez. I got a really interesting question during the season, and it was early in the season. And I'll paraphrase the question. I don't have it in front of me. It was a while ago, but it was a really good question. I've thought about it a lot. Essentially, you know, Derek Jeter making his last tour around baseball, surefire Hall of Famer. And the question was basically comparing some of the numbers from Derek Jeter, some of the numbers from Edgar Martinez, and asking the question, why is one a surefire Hall of Famer and why is the other struggling to get into the Hall of Fame? And I understand the question from the perspective, it wasn't saying that Jeter doesn't belong or Jeter doesn't deserve it, saying Edgar does. That was the crux of the question. And I've been thinking on it quite a bit. So what I did during the course of the year is I just talked to a lot of different people about Edgar Martinez. I tried to get a national perspective with some writers. I talked to a lot of ex-teammates, a lot of observers, you know, just to get a feel for Edgar Martinez and where he fits in terms of Hall of Fame. I think it's a really interesting question. And so we're just going to hear a lot of audio coming up about different people commenting on Edgar Martinez and where they think he fits in terms of Hall of Fame, and just some really cool stories, behind-the-scenes stories as well about Edgar Martinez. So from the present DH, Nelson Cruz, to the past and Edgar Martinez, and I think it fits perfectly because I've been looking over the numbers, and I've had this question a lot. You know, Nelson Cruz signs, so what's my initial reaction to Nelson Cruz signing? And we're going to get more in depth as we move through the next few weeks. But just my initial reaction, first blush reaction was, they're going to get more production out of the DH spot. I mean, that was my first reaction. Nelson Cruz, who, you know, you look at his last season with Baltimore, played a fair amount of the year as a DH. You know, last season, 89 games as the DH. He spent 70 games in the outfield. And I wouldn't be surprised if this season with the Mariners that disparity was even wider in terms of designated hitter and outfielder. I think he's going to spend a lot of time at DH, I mean, a true DH. And, you know, I pored over the numbers. And, you know, it's really amazing. Last season, the designated hitter for the M's, you know, you look at Mariners' history, their entire history, and look at the DH position throughout their history. And I started with OPS, it's just an easy way to rank. And last season, the lowest OPS, the DH position as a position, so every guy who appeared as DH, the lowest OPS in the history of the Mariners last season, 567. You know, DH's last year batted 190 for the Mariners combined, 15 homers and 50 RBIs. And it's been a recent trend. You look at it, the bottom five OPSs in Mariners history at the DH position, 2014, you know, last year, 37th is 2012, 36th is 2008, 35th is 2010, and 34th is 2011. So it's really been a trend. You look at 2013, it was really the outlier. That's the only year in the past few that has not been included in the bottom of OPS. And it's why, you know, I think talking about Edgar Martinez goes hand in hand, too, because you look at the top years of OPS, it's, you know, 95, 1.104. Edgar was just unbelievable that year. And then in 2000, 1996, 1998, 1997, 1999, I mean, you get the drift. All the best years that the Mariners have had at the position, Edgar Martinez was the DH. Shouldn't be surprised. I mean, the position, the award for best DH is named after him. But the position's fallen on hard times the past few years, and that's why my first reaction is, well, Nelson Cruz is going to help that. Even if he can't equal what he did last year, 40 homers, 108 ribbies, batted 271, 859 OPS, you know, seventh in MVP voting, had a monster year for Baltimore in 159 games, just right in the middle of that order for that team that went to the postseason. And even if he can't repeat that monster year, leading the league in home runs, he's going to produce more than the Mariners got at the DH last year, that's for sure. And it's pretty exciting to have a thumper like that in the middle, especially in terms of home runs, 40 last year, 27 the year before, 24 before that, 29, 22, and 33. He's been doing it for a while. And forms a pretty potent middle of the order when you talk about Kyle Seager taking another step forward. You have Robinson Cano in there as well. So exciting times. Nelson Cruz signing. Shannon Dreher, a chance to talk to the new Mariners designated hitter.
Excited, you know. It's one of the happiest moments of my life, you know, to get the deal done, to be able to call plays home for a few years, and to be part of the race, you know. That's what you play for, and as a player who'll be in the playoff before, you know, you want to be there every year.
When Robinson Cano signed here, I think in the introductory press conference, he said he would like to see you here. It took a year. You two obviously are friends. You've probably been watching him. He's been watching you. What do you know of him and this team and where they're at right now?
I know most of everything from the hand, you know. He's a great hitter, you know, and what he brings. Last year to the team, it was the energy and the chemistry to win. And I had the chance to play with him in the WBC and Caribbean Series and All-Star before. And I mean, you always want to do that. We want to play together as a teammate. Mm-hmm. And to be able to accomplish that goal, you know, it's going to be pretty nice. You know, I'm excited. He's excited for the race. The whole team is into, so we should be pretty good.
Last year, it was so fun to watch what you did. And you know, you're in Baltimore, and the home runs start coming, and the hits start, you know, coming. You've always been a good hitter. But why last year? Why did that all
I think operate? It's help, you know. I'd be able to stay healthy and take that many at-bats, you know, accumulate the numbers. I had the chance to look at the year before when I have 109 games. And what I did this year with 109 games, it was ridiculous how similar they look. Mm. So at the end, it's just how many at-bats you can take, how many games you can play, and the number's going to be there.
You step to the plate. I mean, we all know about the power, but how do you see yourself as a hitter?
I like to consider myself a line drive hitter, you know, try to stay in gap-to-gap. Mm-hmm. That's my focus and that's my approach.
Kyle Seager said he's so glad that you're on his team right now because the hardest hit ball he ever saw was the home run that you hit over his head.
Yeah, I got the chance to talk to him after that home run, and he expressed that to me. Even Morrison told me the same. I mean, it was one of those things that as a hitter you just want to have the right approach, you know, and have a productive at-bats.
Now, you said DHing is boring. You going to lobby to get out in the field a little bit more?
Yeah. But it's not my call. It's just a joke, you know. I'm here to help whatever loyalty thing is my feet, and whatever I think I'm going to help the team the most, I'll be happy to do it.
You ready to be the guy? I mean, some people don't like to be the guy. Is that something you're used to, being in the middle of the order and I'm going to step up and I'm going to be the guy?
Yeah, no doubt. I want to be in the situations. See when they walk Robbie, and now it's all about me now, you know. So I'm looking for that, you know, and I'm excited for that situation.
Okay, how did you ask Lloyd for the number?
Actually, Robbie asked me if he had 123. I was like, if you can get it, it's fine, but if not, don't worry about it. So he called and asked Lloyd. So Lloyd called me. If you want the 23, just call me. And then that's how we make it done.
All right, so Robbie kind of, he gets things done.
Yeah. He gets the influence. I mean, you know Lloyd, so you know me, so it was easy to communicate between all three.
That's fantastic. I see you've got a beautiful little family over here. Nelson Cruz away from the baseball field. Who is he? What does he like to do?
I like to spend time with my family. I have a farm in Dominican. Like to be there with the animals, all kinds of animals, and be with family and friends. That was all about, you know. At the end, that was what you're fighting for, and what you're living for, family.
What is it that you like about the farm?
I just bring a lot of peace, you know. You're there relaxing and be with friends and enjoy life with your family.
You have a hitting cage at the farm?
No, I have a hitting cage in my house and a gym also in my house.
Okay.
So I got all that I need close by.
All right. Well, it's great to see that you can enjoy, as you said, the rest of the off season and enjoy Christmas with your family. Thank you, Nelson.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There was Nelson Cruz, the Mariners' new DH. I'm just fascinated by these DH numbers. I just continue to pore over them. How about base on balls? In 95, Mariners DHs, mostly Edgar, walked 117 times. I mean, in 96, 128 walks. That compares to 51 last season. Twice as many in 95 and 96. It's just remarkable. The on-base percentage, the slugging, just doubles galore, over 50 doubles. Edgar was just magic. He was magic and unbelievable. But we'll see what Nelson Cruz can do in that position as the DH. But that glides us neatly into our conversation with Edgar Martinez. I alluded to the question a little bit ago to start the podcast about the question, you know, if Jeter is a surefire Hall of Famer and some of the numbers match up offensively, why isn't Edgar considered a Hall of Famer? If not a surefire, why isn't he getting more love in the vote? So what I did is I tried to talk to a few national writers, a few voters, to get their thoughts on where Edgar Martinez is at in terms of Hall of Fame voting, what kind of player was he, you know, that sort of thing. So let's go through the list. The first one we're going to hear from is Jason Stark. You know him from ESPN. And I simply asked him about Edgar Martinez and where he fits in terms of Hall of Fame.
In my opinion, he is. You know, my first book was a book on the most overrated and underrated players of all time, and I made Edgar the most underrated DH of all time, and I argued then that he was a Hall of Famer, and I still think he's a Hall of Famer. But one of the problems that I ran into this year is, you know, if you're somebody like me, and your feeling is that when you look at the PED era, it is so hard to sort out who did what and what we ought to do about it, that you vote for at least some of the quote-unquote steroid guys, you wind up with a ballot all of a sudden that has more than 10 names. That has never been my problem, and I've been a voter for over 20 years, but these days, and especially this winter, I think I wound up with 15 names I wanted to vote for, including Edgar. And so I've never been somebody who plays games with my ballot. I always try to look at the player, look at his career, look at his accomplishments, look at his era, and decide for myself whether that player was a Hall of Famer or not. And if I decided he was, I voted for him every year. This was a year where I had to use ballot strategy as a guide, and if I'm not mistaken, it meant having to leave Edgar off, and that was really painful for me, really painful, because I totally believe that Edgar is a Hall of Famer. I mean, one of the numbers I've used a lot is, you know, OPS plus, adjusted OPS, which adjusts your OPS for your ballpark and your era, and Edgar's OPS plus for his career was 147. Meanwhile, probably the second greatest DH who ever lived is Paul Molitor. He only had two seasons where he had an OPS plus of 147 out of 21 seasons. And so it's clear to me that Edgar's a Hall of Famer. I just hope we can figure out the whole ballot mess and remove this rule that limits us only to 10 names.
Now, keeping with the ESPN theme, Dave Schoenfeld, who we've had on the show before, who I think is excellent, great with the numbers, and he's got a great perspective as well. Here's his thoughts on Edgar Martinez.
You know, one thing I remember about Edgar is once being in the Mariner clubhouse when he received a new shipment of bats. And I don't know, they get a you know, huge bundle of bats, you know, when they get a new shipment. And he's going through each bat one by one, looking at it, examining it, feeling it for the weight, the grain of the wood. He kept a few, threw out a lot of them. He looked for that perfect bat, and that sums up him as a hitter. You know, everything down to the bats was an art and a science. And, you know, to me, he perfected the art of hitting. One of the best right-handed hitters of all time, on base percentage, doubles, home runs, of course, the great batting averages. In my book, he's a no-brainer Hall of Famer. He's borderline. He hasn't picked up much momentum in the voting, so he's not going to go in anytime soon. Maybe by the end of his 15 years on the ballot, he's up there. I think eventually people will learn to appreciate and respect the numbers he did put up, and I think he gets in eventually.
And then Jim Capel, you know, is a longtime writer for ESPN, a senior writer and columnist for ESPN. He worked at the Seattle PI, so he's very familiar. I mean, he attended R.A. Long High School in Longview and graduated from the University of Washington in Seattle, and he got to watch Edgar Martinez up close, and he had some interesting things to say about Edgar.
Doubles. doubles come through, a great hitter, really slow. Just a true professional. Other things, the eye exercises that he did, he weighed his bats. Just a man who is passionate about hitting. That's what comes to mind.
In terms of Hall of Fame, where do you fall with Edgar?
Yeah, it's a tough one. When the first time he was eligible, I went into it thinking I wasn't going to vote for him, because I don't see designated hitter as being so much as a position as more a spot in the lineup, and that he wasn't contributing in the field, I wasn't going to vote for him. And then I started thinking, well, will I vote for Ichiro? And I thought, well, of course I'm going to vote for Ichiro. And then I thought, well, who would I rather have on the team? Who would be more valuable? I'd rather have Edgar on the team. And I thought, well, if I'd rather have Edgar on my team, then I'm going to vote for Ichiro, well, then I damn well better vote for Edgar, too. And I've never really given it another thought since then. I just think he was a great, valuable hitter.
Obviously, people feel strongly about him here, but what is the national perception of Edgar?
I think that the national perception is that he was a fantastic hitter, perhaps one of the best hitters of his era. Beyond that, I don't think that he's really on their radar all that much. You bring him up, people certainly know who he is. But he's nobody that there's, you know, he's not a beloved figure outside Seattle. There is some debate about whether he belongs in the Hall of Fame, but it comes down to do designated hitters belong in the Hall of Fame? I mean, we'll get a little bit more on that when Frank Thomas goes on the ballot next year, who I still always view as a first baseman. Even though I think he might have had more at-bats as a DH than as a first baseman. And I always looked at Paul Molitor as an infielder, even though he ended up playing a lot of time as a DH. I don't know, it's really tough. People who don't vote for him, I can understand why they don't, but I do.
Now that's some of the national look, writers, voters, at Edgar Martinez and where he fits in terms of Hall of Fame. I thought it'd be interesting to talk to a couple of pitchers that faced him as well. And one of them, teammates for a short time, but ended up facing Edgar Martinez a lot in his career. Mark Langston, a former Mariners ace. And yeah, he makes a pretty big statement about Edgar.
Edgar was probably the best, to me, he seemed like the best right-handed hitter that I faced in my entire career. And Edgar was He was a guy that if you pounded him in hard inside, which that was part of my strength, he had the ability to pull his hands in and hit the ball out of the ballpark. So if you try to go, okay, if he can hit that pitch, what's my next option? Change up on the outer half, go away. So you'd go to that pitch, and the next thing you know, he'd hit this, you know, a base hit or a double into the right field gap. So he could gap you from side to side depending on where the pitch was. He was such a tough at-bat. If you made any mistake, he really crushed you. And if you executed your pitch, he would only get a single. So it's like, and I'm not the only guy. There's a lot of guys that where we all raise our hands, especially the lefties. You know, Edgar was just a very difficult guy for us to face.
Obviously, when he was a young player coming up with the Mariners, how did he change through his career as a Mariner?
You know, I barely was with Edgar, you know, when I was here and, you know, coming up through the system. And, you know, he was a guy that's always hit. I mean, he was a 375 hitter in AAA before, you know, he got to the big league. So that's always – he's always had that. And he was a really good third baseman before, you know, he got hurt. I mean, he was a guy that could really play third base for you. And you could see the future at third base for him, and then he had the shoulder problem. But, you know, to me, he's truly probably – one of the best DHs. To me, he was just a DH only, where some of these guys that were Frank Thomas and them, you know, they're not considered a complete DH. Where Edgar, for the bulk of his career, that's what he did. To me, is probably hands down probably the best DH that's probably ever assumed that position.
Is there anyone in today's game a good comparable?
Boy, nothing really comes to mind quickly that has that ability. Although I see Mike Trout is a guy that has that ability to kill you on the inside part of the plate and still take that soft stuff to right field. And, you know, but Mike Trout translates to Ken Griffey Jr. He translates to every great hitter, I think, that, you know. But he is a guy that does make adjustments for at-bat, and you can't stick to a pattern. You can't get him out on a certain way. And he does hit the ball where it's pitched. He doesn't try to pull that outside pitch. He drives it that way. And that's really what made Edgar such a dangerous hitter, is that outside part of the pitch, outside pitch that you want him to pull, he doesn't, and he drives it that direction. So there were not a lot of holes. And so it's hard to really picture a hitter in today's game that possessed a lot of the skills that Edgar had.
And the statement there that really rings for me is, the best right-handed hitter he faced, which is remarkable when you consider he's faced a list of Hall of Fame right-handed hitters. Cal Ripken, you know, over 100 plate appearances. Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, Frank Thomas, Ricky Henderson, Dave Winfield, Kirby Puckett, Carlton Fisk, Jim Rice, Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg, Gary Carter, Barry Larkin, all right-handed hitters that Mark Langston faced in his career, says Edgar's the best of the group, which to me is really saying quite a bit. Another former pitcher, Bill Krueger, his thoughts on Edgar Martinez.
I got a chance to see a lot of great players because I played a long time. I played a lot of different teams. But when you think about the lineup that was in place around Edgar, and you step across the field and you're on the opposing team, this is a great litmus test, is that you could go through the Rodriguez's and the Buhners and the Tino Martinez's and the Kenny Griffey's. The guy they were most worried about was Edgar Martinez. He was the one that they feared with runners in scoring position. So I think that's a pretty fair test of his greatness. I mean, we can go through the numbers as a right-hand hitter and his batting average and his consistency and his ability to hit for extra bases. But at the end of the day, the game is scoring runs and driving them in. And he could do it really well in the clutch, and he hit really good pitchers well.
What did you try and do against him?
Well, he's one of those guys you can't fall into a pattern, but you can't be afraid. So it's a tricky proposition. I always felt that you know, you had to be able to, as a pitcher that I was, I had to establish my fastball. That's going to be important. But what it worked for me the best was to be able to throw him some soft stuff early in the count and try to come in hard late. Because what he did was he looked for balls, he tried to get you that count, and he tried to hurt you. You get a 102-131 count. But then as he got deeper in the count, he tried to stay up the middle of the field in the other way, so you could bust him in if he had a good fastball. So in the perfect world, I'd be able to land my curveball early in the count and beat him with a fastball in. It's not always a perfect world, though. he was a little bit tougher than that. He fought off pitches, and he covered the plate really well. And anybody that hit the ball line to line like he could, he was really difficult.
Is there anyone that you watch now playing the game that's similar in Edgar Martinez as a hitter?
Well, I think Cabrera is in a lot of ways. He can handle the bat. He can let the ball travel. He can be beaten in, but he'll look in and hurt you. He can hit other pitches. He had a lot of power to the opposite field. He can hit with runners in scoring position. He's a bigger Edgar Martinez, I think, with more power, more leverage. But I think as close as you can get to the type of hitter that he is would be Miguel Cabrera.
I loved what he had to say. And, you know, we hear the stories, too, about how much work he put in behind the scenes to kind of mold himself into the kind of hitter he turned out to be. Mike Blauer's some really good insight on some of that.
He was the first guy I ever saw that actually had a scale in his locker to weigh each individual bat. I've never seen that before, but it had to be 31 ounces on the button, or it was a batting practice bat. So if he ordered a dozen bats, he might get two, maybe three tops that he would actually use in a game. So that was a little bit unusual for him. One of the things I thought was really impressive is the first time I watched him take live batting practice with a donut on his bat. That was interesting, because I thought if he shanks one off that donut, it's going to kill our team, and I don't know what he's doing right now. But basically what he was trying to do was to get himself his hands in the position that he wanted to stay inside the ball longer. And if you don't do that with that weight on there, the barrel's going to drop. And so that's the reason why he did that. So I actually tried it myself. It was a little bit scary, to be honest with you. And just, you know, a lot of different things like that. The eye exercises that he used to do in front of his locker. I don't know, a lot of people don't know it, but he had some issues with his eyes, and so he had to strengthen the muscles to be able to control it at all times in the game. So he would have to sit there before games and do these eye exercises that he was religious about it. And then I don't think I've ever seen anybody take more swings than that guy. From the time he showed up to the ballpark till the game was over, and sometimes after the game. So he's impressive, but those are some of the things that are unique to Edgar. And you kind of shake your head sometimes wondering what he's got going on in his head, but obviously he's the best right-handed hitter I ever saw. And, you know, there was a good reason behind it.
How thoughtful was he in terms of on-the-field matchups, that sort of thing?
He was great. I can remember when I first came here, Edgar was still playing third. So I was kind of the swing guy, play some first, play third, play the corner outfield spots as a utility guy. And when Edgar got hurt and Lou put me in there to start while he was on the DL, I had a real opportunity to pick his brain. And I can remember the first time I went up to Edgar, I can't remember who the pitcher was. We were playing the Brewers, and I asked him about the pitcher, so he kind of gave me the scouting report on him. And I said, okay, I said, so what does he like to do in this situation and that situation? So Edgar kind of ran through that. And I said, okay, so I need to look for X, Y, and Z. He goes, no. He said, that's the way he would pitch to me. This is how he's going to pitch you tonight. And I went, really? And he said, yeah, this is what they're going to try to do. And it was because we played the Brewers the night before, and he got a scouting report from the catcher, and he was paying attention to what they were doing to me. And so he assumed that pitcher would do it that night, and he got it to a T. So, and then the other thing, too, if you tipped your pitches at all, he would pick that up. If you fanned your glove, or if you did a little something that was out of the ordinary to throw, a curveball or something, he was the best at picking stuff like that up. He would tell me what those keys were. He would tell everybody if they wanted to know them. Sometimes you would see those things so late in the delivery that I couldn't pick the ball up quickly enough, but he was able to do that. I mean, he wasn't a great hitter by accident, and although he worked as hard, I could have put the same amount of work in, and I felt like I was a hard worker. But I just sometimes, you know, you just don't know what guys are thinking, what they're seeing, or how they're feeling. And he had a beautiful swing. He had a left-hand hitter swing from the right side of the plate. So, but that was pretty cool.
And finally, I think this one is very cool. The double. The most famous hit probably in Mariners history, definitely the most famous hit in the career of Edgar Martinez. And Tony Fernandez, who was on that Yankees team, was on the field when Edgar Martinez strolled to the plate. Here's what Tony Fernandez was thinking with Edgar Martinez at the plate and that situation with the game on the line against the Yankees in that postseason game five.
You know, when Edgar came to the plate, I said, oh my goodness, this is not the guy that I want to see at the plate in this situation. I know he's going to hit the ball hard somewhere. I knew it. I just didn't know it was going to be that way. But because Edgar usually hits the ball hard the other way. He usually hit the ball the other way. But he was such a good hitter. I mean, how in the world he stayed inside that pitch and kept it fair on the line? I say, I think only Edgar Martinez could do that.
And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez. Swung on the line down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Junior to third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My, oh, my.
So there it is. A lot of different perspectives on Edgar Martinez, some national, some local, former players. I did have a couple players say that they didn't think he should be in, and mostly it was in terms of longevity. I didn't get a lot of DH talk, but a couple former players were more of the longevity. But for the most part, most of the people I talked to, and I've talked to quite a few, that's just kind of a sampling, but for the most part, most people think he should be in. He deserves to be in. I know. I think down the road that he will get in, but I think it's going to take a long time. I don't see it in the near future. And in fact, it was a good point made by Buster Olney, who talked about this recently, where it's kind of a mess right now. It's just a log jam too. And guys like Edgar Martinez are really just caught in the middle of what's going on in terms of voting. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are coming up on the ballot, and a lot of guys on the ballot who you thought were going to be in are not being voted in, and it's tough. And Jason Stark alluded to it too with the 10-person limit. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Could take him a while to get in, but will he get in? I don't know. But I don't even know if I answered the original question, but hopefully you enjoyed it. And I'm sure it's a topic we'll touch on again, and I hope you enjoyed it. As this turned out to be the DH podcast, a lot of Nelson Cruz and a lot of Edgar Martinez, and that's a topic I always enjoy talking about. So that's going to do it for us for this one. Hope you have a wonderful holiday. We won't be back until after, maybe later this week, beginning of next week. We'll see how things turn out. Until then, enjoy your holidays, and we'll talk to you soon.
Swung on and belted deep to center field. Bernie Williams looks up, and this will fly, fly away. Edgar Martinez has just given the Mariners a 5-2 lead. Dead center field, no doubt about it. Edgar Martinez has stuck everybody's finger here, 47,000 of them, into a 110-volt outlet. They are going crazy.